The following program, Cultural Baggage, is sponsored by DrugTruth.net, publishers of Forever Salem, America's Eternal Wars, Drugs, and Terror, written by Reverend Farrell Dean Becker.
Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war.
Hello, my friends. Thank you for being with us on this edition of Cultural Baggage. I am Dean Becker, the Reverend Most High. We have two great guests with us today, both of them dealing with the criminal justice system here in the United States. And we're going to be talking about, well, the criminals running the justice system here in these United States. I want to first introduce Mr. Eric Sterling. He was the counsel for the U.S. House of Representatives Judiciary Committee. I want to welcome you, Eric. How you doing?
Hello, Dean.
Thank you, sir. And also have Mr. Roger Goodman. He's a Washington State representative. And if I got this right, Roger, you're head of the Judiciary Committee up there, sir, correct?
Oh, hi, Dean. Yeah, chair of the Community Safety Committee. It's a jurisdiction over the criminal system.
Fair enough. Rather than throwing a wrench into the works to jumble it up and confuse everybody, they've thrown the whole toolkit into it. There's no way we can even begin to touch on all the news stories that they're putting forward, well, each week, heck, each day. Please respond to that thought, will you?
Dean, I think you do identify the sense of overwhelming change that is constantly coming. There are continuous revelations of whether it's the political retribution against senators who challenge the president or members of the House, or the legal cases that fly by, the acts of misconduct, the acts of violence, the resignations, the policy chaos and legal chaos that the Trump administration generates. It's so newsworthy and it is so stunning. It is events happen so quickly that to try to process them and appreciate them is challenged because of the next event that then comes. I think numbers of commentators have spoken about the recent supposed settlement of the absurd lawsuit that the president had filed against the Internal Revenue Service for the leaking by a contractor of his confidential tax return some number of years ago. He claimed $10 billion in damages. It is very hard to see how he incurred any damages at all, considering that he was subsequently reelected president by a majority of the voters. In what conceivable world was Donald Trump harmed by this leak? And to then settle this with his own Justice Department in a way in which completely unrelated third parties are then entitled to some sort of settlement fund that they can appeal to on the claim that they have been legally harassed by the U.S. government by being investigated and prosecuted for things that grand juries have determined are bona fide offenses, and then in fact, in many instances, been tried or have pleaded guilty for acts, in many instances, acts of violence. This is, it was described as perhaps the greatest act of political corruption in American history. coupled with then a further order from the acting attorney general that the president, his family members, and their businesses are to be exempted from any past tax liabilities when the leaked documents show that they probably owed the government $100 million in unpaid taxes. You know, this is a president who is a billionaire and paid $750 in income tax in 2016. This is unfathomable dishonesty.
Yeah, I mean, it's all intentional, right? The flood the zone, crank up the outrage, distract people from what's really going on, which is ripping off America, polluting America, exploiting America, and it's all about the money, of course. So what's interesting is that I think it's certainly not going to unravel because there's solid support for Trump, enough for him to continue to embolden him. But in the Congress, just in the last, week or so, I think the Republican leaders are getting skittish about approving a completely unlawful slush fund and approving this damn ballroom, which I hope either will be torn down after his presidency or will be used as a shelter for the unhoused. I think that would be appropriate. But again, it's intentional. It's trying to distract us, trying to outrage us. And it's a circus. It's on purpose. It's just like, hey, this is fun. I mean, matter of fact, I think during the beginning of the Iran bombing, again, one completely unlawful, unprovoked international disaster. Trump was saying something like, oh, well, we'll bomb you just for fun. I mean, he literally said that, right?
Yes.
So it's all for fun. It's all for attention. It's all a circus. It's all a show. Now I'm out here in the northwest corner of the country, Washington State. I'm in Seattle. Administration doesn't lie. I don't call them the administration, actually. It's the regime. This is a federal regime. They're engaging in illegal activities. The regime doesn't like us out here in Washington State. The World Cup is about to come out here, and I think ICE might be coming out with them to try to snatch more people off the streets. That's what's happening here on the West Coast. So we're not in Washington, D.C. We're trying to live our lives out here, long-time citizens they're not citizens. They're living here for decades, and they and their families are being abducted again, unlawfully, and deported or held in awful conditions, unsanitary conditions, and so forth. That's just one. So people are afraid to go shopping. People are afraid to send their kids to school on a day-to-day basis. There's a lot of fear in our communities. Also, the regime has supported slashing the withheld hundreds of millions, billions of dollars of funds that the Congress had already appropriated. So we here in Washington State had to come up with $1 billion for healthcare that we were owed by the federal government, but they unlawfully withheld from us. So that, again, people are suffering. It's disgusting. And we're embarrassing ourselves. Our standing in the world will not ever be restored because the countries of the world with whom we have been allies will not trust us, even if we do elect a more responsible leader in the future. So I regret what's happening for my children. My kids are just now emerging from, high school and college, and they have to inherit all of this. So it's just a tragedy.
The scandals and the lawlessness within the government, the slush fund, for example, these are profoundly, as outrageous as they are distractions from the policy failures. When Roger talks about the suffering of people, this is really, of course, the most important thing that we should be concerned about in some sense. The fundamentals of what the government's impact is on us as people. We can't carry on this conversation without sort of observing that the president has started us on a war without the approval of Congress, a war without a pretext of justification, you know, a war in which thousands of lives have been lost, and a war which has utterly upended both our economy and the global economy. And so, you know, the impacts on inflation, the impact on jobs, the impact on every single financial aspect, everything is going to become more expensive and is becoming more expensive. And that's real suffering, because it's not as though there's some automatic way in which wages go up 30 or 40% to cover a 30 or 40% increase in the cost of fuel. You know, here in Washington, I live a couple of miles from the National Institutes of Health. And the devastation of America's health research and scientific research establishment, will impact our children and our children's children. The loss of our premier position in world scientific research and in health and biomedical research. So at a very moment when there is a growing threat of a Ebola virus in the Congo, where there is no vaccine, there is no treatment, and where Trump's policies, without the approval of Congress, without the approval of the American people, have now sort of set the stage where the American role, which would have been to help protect the entire world and the American people, is now missing.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that this last night, about how we have lost our preeminence in medical research. The world can't count on us anymore. Remember Doge? Remember that little blip in history when they literally took a chainsaw to the government? And I think this is the part of the motivation here is religious, because this is called the accelerationists. You know, they want to burn it all down because then that will, you know, give rise to the rapture, and they actually believe this. But I think we're bending, but we're not going to break. I think we're going to be injured. We won't fully recover. But our institutions that have been trampled on will, I hope, be treated delicately once again in the future. But right now we have to kind of just withstand this. There's an assault on, literally an assault on the people in our communities. Masked agents are snatching people off the streets. There's an assault on the rule of law, again, on purpose. Particularly voting, election law. That's where they're trying to, because otherwise there's no way they can carry on if they lose elections. I am fairly confident that on the state level, because that's where elections are regulated, that we will begin to right the ship in these midterms and be able to neutralize the regime. But there's an assault on the truth. I mean, there's assaults all over the place. Again, this is unprecedented in this country, right? It's happened before many times in history, but it's happened here for the first time, and we're sort of shocked by it. And that's the point. I'm not shocked by it. I'm regretting it and doing what I can to fight against it. But again, out here on the West Coast, far away from Washington, D.C., we're trying to live our daily lives. And what the regime has done has made it much more difficult. We don't have the resources for education, for healthcare, for transportation. And we're being punished because we're a blue state, which again, is just anything. I don't think anything can be as unethical for an elected leader to choose to punish those who didn't vote for him. That's not how our system's supposed to work. But again, it's not how our system's supposed to work, and that's what they want to do, how it's not supposed to go. It's all for fun, all for outrage. Flood the zone so people can't pay attention to it all at once.
I'm going to break in here to remind you, you are listening to Cultural Baggage on Pacifica Radio and the Drug Truth Network. We're speaking with Mr. Eric Sterling, who was the counsel for the U.S. Congress Committee on Criminal Justice. We're also speaking with Mr. Roger Goodman, who heads the Community Safety Committee with jurisdiction over the criminal justice system in Washington State.
I am up for election this year. I'm running for my 11th term. I've been around for a while. My opponent was at the January 6th insurrection, and she talks about it loudly and proudly. And the other J6ers out here in Washington State who were prosecuted, who were incarcerated, and who were pardoned are also out here standing with her side by side, running against me for re-election. She's not going to win because my district is highly educated and affluent and hates all this stuff. But she's going to have a little bit of a platform, and I'm going to try to deny it to her. I'm going to run an under-the-radar campaign. I don't want her and her J6ers to have any get any attention. But I am running against a MAGA extremist, and I never thought it would happen. It's kind of like a bucket list thing for me for my political career. But it's literally come home here, way out in Washington State, where the J6ers are wearing their incarceration and their pardon as a badge of honor. They talk about it a lot. And I said, go ahead, keep talking about it, because I'll get elected that way. But so they're loud and proud, unashamed. Well, not unashamed, shameless, I should say, shameless, affirmatively. And I dare say a little bit mentally ill. I mean, what is going on with this segment of America?
Luckily, there's a couple of January 6th officers who were assaulted on that date that have now filed a suit against Trump's Looney Tunes slush fund. And I think they're probably the first of many to do so. What are your thoughts in that regard?
Well, that's the thing, is that the regime will continue to push out these outrageous, unlawful and harmful policies and actions, because they know that working its way through the courts, the opposition is going to take a lot of time. And so the deprivation of funding to the states, the attempted overturning of laws and so forth, is not lawful. And yet it takes a lot of time to work through the courts. And when this regime came into place, I said, thank God for the courts. I knew that that's where we're going to have to be standing on the ramparts and trying to defend our country. But it takes time. So a lot of damage is done in the meanwhile. This unlawful slush fund and so forth, and I hope the ballroom and the trample arch and all the other disgusting self-congratulatory things will be held up. But it takes time. And in the meanwhile, we're suffering.
Wait, no, Roger is absolutely right about the way in which our court system has, in so many instances, struck down improper actions by Trump. But finding, in the case of this slush fund, exactly the best legal theory and the best plaintiffs to advance such a theory, who can say, we're the ones who can make a claim that this fund must be defeated by the court. That's a little harder to do, I fear.
Yeah, I agree. I think this slush fund will not be defeated in the courts. It'll be defeated in the arena of politics. They won't get the votes. They just won't. They won't approve it. They won't appropriate it because they'll suffer politically in their own districts. It's that corrupt. This regime is not hypocritical. There's no hypocrisy because it's all out loud. Everything's the quiet part out loud. It's like, yeah, but let's set up a special slush fund for the people who committed crimes, who support me, so that I can compensate them. I mean, there's nothing hidden about it, you know? And to that extent, finally, the people, even the media, which is sort of bought and sold as well, is reacting negatively. So I think politically, the slush fund won't happen rather than legally.
What is in part striking is, as creative as they are in coming up with schemes like this, Mitch McConnell kind of put it, you know, well, the former Senate majority leader is saying, this is either, you know, immoral or unquestionably stupid. There is a shocking amount of stupidity that President Trump and his advisors are operating with. The acts of political revenge, when the president has a few senators in his narrow majority depend upon, and then attack two of them. Senator Cassidy is an essential vote for him. Senator Cassidy, Republican of Louisiana, says, I'm going to take you out, but I'm taking you out with another 6 months left in your term to sort of work against me. And then to go against, the number two or number three Senate Republican, John Cornyn, and say, I'm going to support your opponent in the primary. You are antagonizing men who are really essential to your program in the Senate. And so the stupidity of it is just so stunning, aside from the vindictiveness of it. I mean, it's the stupidity is equally as astonishing as the corruptness.
I mean, I'm just, it's hard for me to identify with a billionaire. It doesn't have to be this president, with a billionaire who has, let's just say, $3 billion, and that they don't want to pay $100 million in taxes. Okay, I understand that, but it's just that if someone has $1 billion and their neighbor has 1.2 billion and they feel poor, it's like it's never enough, and I just don't get it. It's all about the money. It's always been about the money. It's so shallow. So I guess we can say not only is it unlawful and stupid, but it's very shallow as well. And that is not sustainable, right, in our democracy. And we do have a democratic system, however flawed it is. And this is like when I go out running for office and I go door to door, I meet the voters at their doors. Most voters are grandmas who care about their grandkids, people who don't like sitting in traffic, and normal people. But then you run up against these folks that are watching Newsmax. They come to the door and they just regurgitate it to me, and I try to understand. What are you talking about? And it all evaporates within moments after I leave the house. But there's a stupidity and a shallowness to all of this.
Just one other point about the democracy is, when we think about the voters, in 1928, Herbert Hoover won a landslide victory as president, a landslide victory, and in 1932 was defeated in a landslide victory 4 years later. That the voters can recognize when the national leader can utterly has failed to address the problems that they pledged to address, as we're going to see as we are seeing with the economy, and we are seeing the fear that President Trump's allies have about the 2024 election cycle. I too share Roger's long-term optimism and faith in our democratic system and in the American people.
One other thing I want to address is the stock market yo-yo, the oil price yo-yo that Trump puts forward. We have a treaty, and then later, no, there's no treaty. We're going to bomb the hell out of them, and that tends to fluctuate the stock market and the oil prices. And his friends know about it in advance, and they're profiting from that knowledge. So your response.
It's incredible how transparent this is. This is a new kind of insider trading going on. Insider trading used to be, what's going on inside of the company, and so you invest one way or the other because you know the company's going to make a certain move. This is now insider trading within a administration, like knowing what policy decision the president's going to make and when, and therefore what to invest in. And I take a look at the hundreds of millions of dollars that this president has profited from the recent disclosure of all the stock trades and so forth. Again, it's all out there. It's all out loud. It's not hidden. It's bare-knuckled corruption. It is astounding. And And part of it is for us to be astounded, for us to be shocked, for us to be outraged, because it's part of the show. I walked, because I'm running for re-election now, I walked in the neighborhoods in my district yesterday, and I walked up a driveway, and there was a ice cream truck. It was like a little mini thing, and it had a clown on top of the vehicle, and it was a clown car. And I realized that that's what we are, and again, it's on purpose. It's almost for the entertainment of people to watch the destruction and to watch people suffer and to bring out the worst in people. And it will end, but this is an awful period in American history right now.
The Roger's point, it is, one of the things I was struck by, for example, is that leaders in the nicotine industry made multi-million dollar donations to the president's super PAC, then had a meeting with the president to object to the FDA's efforts to protect public health regarding flavored nicotine vaping. And in the middle of the meeting, it decides, okay, this is what my supporters want, and calls up the Food and Drug Commissioner and says, change this. So I was looking at you. So Altria is one of the biggest of the tobacco companies, and I was just looking at how their stock price has happened in the last 6 months. In the last 6 months, the stock price has gone up 28.9%. These are, the people in who are the owners of this anticipated that they would be able to get in with Trump and boost the value of their corporation by making a few million dollars in contributions to his PAC, and then reap hundreds of millions of dollars in increased value in their assets by driving up the price of their stocks. These are
Yeah, there's so many other examples of the Palantir, for instance, it's basically military software. Wars are now drones, right? So Palantir has all the software for that, and people invested in that, knowing ahead of time that we were going to be selling all this stuff. Trying to think of, oh, Nvidia, the chip maker. Trump made a deal. Oh, well, okay, you can sell your chips to China. Which, of course, we're not supposed to be helping China at all, but if you can make money here, sure, okay. As people invested in that and make a whole bunch of money. It's one example after another like that.
Well, gentlemen, we're going to have to wrap it up here. You out there listening, keep your ear to the ground, pay attention. These guys will fleece us and F us as every chance they get. I remind you once again, because of prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. I urge you to please be careful. Always remember that euphoria is a blessing, not a crime. Hold on, there's more.
I said, Doctor, I don't mind being called a brilliant, total tyrant dictator, but I don't want to be called dumb.
To the Drug Truth Network listeners around the world, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage and the Unvarnished Truth. Cultural Baggage is a production of the Pacifica Radio Network. Archives are permanently stored at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy. And we are all still tap dancing on the edge of an abyss.